Okay, so the first page of the Malbim, I was able to get the, there's one of the original editions of the Malbim. He just put his Pirush without the Chumash on top, so you got a lot more on the page. So you conserve the pages. We'll see as we go along. Some of the other ones we can't conserve so easily. Okay, I want to start from the left column. There's a small piece which is bracketed off, and the truth is, he really adds another piece, but maybe we'll go back to the other piece. See, so like this. So the Torah, when the Torah talks about the Dor HaFlaga, the Dor HaMalba gets this long arichus. You know, the Russian speaks to Noach. You know, the tells you that how everything's falling apart. The Russian speaks to Noach, and Noach brings there's two conversations, and he brings all the animals into the table, and you know, and how long the water. It's a, over here it says he colored itself over the worm achadim, and they start building a migdol. The Russian says, you know, it doesn't the plans don't sound so good, and he sends them all over the world, like. What exactly was the veira? What did they do wrong? Like, it doesn't say Kimal or Tzchomas. It doesn't say what exactly the veira is. The Torah doesn't say it. So, that's one of the issues which you need to explain, which many of the Forshim grapple with. We'll see multiple different approaches. But the Malbim said like this: Lakein lo herach v'chet Torah flaga ki lo yizoyz kavanas hasipur. The purpose over here was not to tell you the chet. The Malbim suggests. The main point is we want to point out that mankind devolved into multiple languages was a divine intervention. It was fairly close before Matan Torah. So comes Moshe Rabbeinu, Shas Matan Torah, and says, listen, this is a story. Says Moshe, come on, you made it up. It can't be. You know this. You know we have. What do you mean? We have stones which are 3,000 years old, which have different languages. No, apparently not. Right? They were able to know that it wasn't true. That acted as a raya to the mitzvahs of the Torah. The problem is because of the Sefer Olam, the Ma'aser Dor HaFlaga Lo Hoya B'Tchilas Yimei Peleg Rak Shavrom Hoya Oz Ben Mem Ches Shana. It wasn't even 70 years. It was 452 years. Avram saw it. You're talking about something which happened very recently, in the recent past. There was people around who were a few generations back who supposedly witnessed this thing. You're going to say it occurred, and they never told any of their kids about it. It's not going to sell. If really the nations have been around for multiple generations before this, not just recently, because the division into nations was a very recent division. Till then, it was one unit. It was an empire. It wasn't nations. Because eight bar alamitas divrei Torah, Moshe b'terasa emes. So that's the purpose of the story according to the Malbim. It wasn't so much to tell you the chet and what the einish was. It was to give you a background of we're looking at this world and we see that there's multiple nations here and we see there's multiple languages here and that's something which potentially could be around for many, many generations, you know, many hundreds of thousands of years. And Moshe says, no, happened very recently, happened 400 years ago. This is the story, right? So I'm not gonna, the same way you're not going to walk in and tell you, you know, come in the year 2000 and say, you know, America, 200 years ago there was a story of a guy named George Washington. Never heard of it before, but I'll tell you this is what happened. You know, really? You can't make that up. Right? So Moshe is saying, 400 years ago this is what happened. Moshe couldn't make it up. It must be it's the truth. So they acted as an aid raya for the emes of the Moshe's Torah. That's how the Malbim understands. And that's what he talked about earlier in that. He raises a question in the first part.
You're saying it came back up because of it's so recent in history.
It's so recent in history. And it had to be true. Okay. That's the Malbim. The reason why the Torah did not give a full explanation of the chet and the etc. Because that wasn't the point. The point wasn't to get involved. Dor Mabul, apparently the Torah was interested in telling us what the chait was, and why there was punishment, etc. Or that wasn't the goal. The goal was to explain where the Umas came from, where the Lashenas came from, that happened fairly recently. What they did exactly wrong, and why they were punished, as we spread out. Not important, Malvin said. Okay.
Not important.
That's what the Torah didn't speak about. The Torah does not explain what they did wrong. Because I came along and say droshes, you know, but in the Torah itself, we don't have any seat for what exactly was wrong, and what exactly, you know, how was an oinish, why is spreading out considered an oinish. The whole thing is not very, very not clear. It's a very interesting lashonis. Now, it comes to the next piece, is the droshes aran. Now, he starts off with almost the same type of language. We're left in the dark. We're almost like banging into, you know, blind people banging into a wall. We have almost like touching the wall and trying to figure out where to go. It's totally confusing. What they do, they want to be good people, they want to be one big unit, want to be happy family. That she rewarded for that. Unity is a good thing. We find that the Pesukim say that that's considered Yashur. There's a Gemara, Bereishis Rabba, so I feel like they have a Zora called Zman Shasholem Beinayim, ain't mean as it didn't Mesucha connect them. Even if they do have a Zora, but as long as there's peace, the Rasham will not punish them. Even though Ephraim is getting together to do their negative things, but Hanachloi, the Rasham, leave them, don't touch them. So the Pesuk says, they were Am Echa, the Sofa Echa, the Kulam, that's good. So why are they getting punished? But they're wrong. So it's very confusing. He says, now the Midrashim seem to indicate that they did things wrong. He says, the problem is in the Pesukim, the Pesuk which is quoted over here, it says, the Pesuk seems to indicate the problem is not the past, but the future. So we start telling you what the Veir is, like the Midrashim say. So as opposed to say, the concern is what's going to be in the future. Right? The problem wasn't lo yibatzim kol shayos molasos, that they will. There's nothing stopping them for the future. That's not the problem. The problem is they did an aveira. One more says that they were mechav in the shame of Adazar. So the problem was about Adazar. Okay, so the problem is not what they do in the future. You don't get punished for Adazar for the future. You get punished for what you did already. So the midrashim are difficult to understand. Also, some of the midrashim sound like strange. Like they said, you know, these weren't. They were not unintelligent people. So we're going to go up to the heaven, we're going to take axes and, you know, break open the storehouses of water and let out the water, because God should be in control of it, or we should be in control of the water. Like, really? Like, you know, what were they thinking? Okay. Now, so the Ran says the following. Next page. So at least I marked off this time where to look at. So in Dara Flug, I want to suggest the following shot in the Dara Flug. Can't Savaki Beisa he Hoyokobane Oilam. They did have incorrect beliefs. They're all doing about Zorah. There were few individuals. There was Noach, there was Shem, there was people who followed them, there was Avram. There was a small group of people which saw that Avodah Zorah is incorrect, but the vast majority of people were doing. They were misguided, and they had incorrect understanding of what how to serve. They weren't able to gather people to join them. And part of the issue was they weren't the people in power. The people in power had their avodah zarah, so they couldn't. You know, Avram finally takes a stand against Nimrod, right? But that's quite a move, right? You know, the average, you know, we know the true evidence, but you know, to start making a stand, we're going to get killed, we get, you know, tortured.
Okay.
Now. Vain Sophic. Ki oisim atzadikim asher hoyo yechidim b'darasahem. These individuals who knew the truth, Having multiple nations would be a very good thing for them. If they have difficulty living in one country, they'll move somewhere else. Like we have in our times, So in the Muslim countries, they're persecuting the Jews. They'll run somewhere else. Umisham Yishmael, or vice versa, if they're being persecuted in the Catholic countries, they'll go to Yishmael. This allows us to have a place to live in our tzaras. Okay. So
if it was, but it was only one big Mamshala, so
where do you run?
Where are you gonna run?
Okay. So he says like this. Next page. He says the truth that they were not doing anything, which the Torah does not indicate they did something which is bad at this point in time. But the question is, what's it gonna lead to? Almost a kino hayuralahem ralahem. But Gemara says that for Rishoyim, gathering together and being in peace with each other is not good. Tzadikim, Akinus is Tarvalahem Tarval Island. A period is Ralahem Ral Island. And Rishoyim, a period is Tarvalahem Tarval Island. And Akinus is Ralahem Ral Island. So getting together is not a good thing. They came to Shinar, which not Nimrod was the leader. He was like really into this Avodah Zarah stuff. He really gave it to Avraham Avinu a hard way, you know. It wasn't live and let live, If this is going to continue, we're going to have the whole world accepting Avodah Zarah. It's not going to stop the tzaddikim. What they couldn't do originally, they'll eventually get to. And they wanted to make their Avodah Zarah be the important one. But nobody could win because each country, that allowed for the Hashem to have a place to go. Okay?
Sounds like he's saying two things. Sounds like he's saying one is that there's a mile of having a separation of different states, so that there's an ongoing conflict between from one state to the, each one wants their Avodah Zarah to out to the other guys, and then there's a second. Is that one?
I think it's one thought. We'll see later on that thought in the Sepurna. But right now he's just saying that everybody wants that their Avodah Zarah should be on top.
Right. So
once everybody comes one unit, there's only one Avodah Zarah, so it'll be on top, and then we're in big trouble. That's the more the Rishonim referred to the Masechtas Pesachim in two units. The first unit was through the fourth paragraph is called Pesach Rishon, and the second unit in a cutesy way, right, is called Pesach Sheni because it dealt with the halachas of the karbonos of the Korban Pesach. So it was called like a second unit of Masechtas Pesach. Pesachim. That's why it's called Pesachim, by the way, right?
There's two Pesachim in it.
Two Pesachs in it. Uh-huh. So comes along this Avodah Zarah, and he says, we're better than you. They kill all the Zechor Mabedin. We don't let you live. You had the Domim under your control, and you wiped them out. And we're nice. We're much nicer than you guys. So this is what they said over there. Armalei, Hechatava. So what would your plan be? Tachlina Lakula, your goal is to wipe out all the Jews. Let's not go back. We don't live by you. We're not all by you. The Ma'idika Gabaychu, Elamai what? You killed all the Jews by you, which means in country X they still have Jews. The country might not have any Jews. So Karlachu Machusa Kadia. So you don't have, there's something wrong with your mouth because, you know, we have Jews. You don't have Jews, right? So you, it's not because you're big tzaddikim. It's because you understand it's not worth it. What are you going to accomplish? Amar Gapa the Rami. So one of the leaders of Rome said, "Baha Nachsin and Baha Sakin." That's a good answer. So the destruction of the Jews, the reason why they don't do it is because they feel that they don't have a worldwide dominion. But if they had worldwide dominion, they'd be after the Jews. Okay? Okay, now.
Because they don't want to do like a half-baked job, but what's the vibe?
Yeah, because you know the goal is wipe out the Jews. Nobody likes to do a half-baked job. So we came up with all the Jews anyway, so you know.
They
didn't have anything bad intent, be'etzim. But Rabba came out of it. It wasn't an oinish. They had a plan. The Russia took away the plan. But there was no oinish over here. So and now they have different nations. Okay, so what's bad? Kol shadaver ra kibud Hashem hu ra. The Rosh saw that the results will be negative. Fine, and that's why the Rosh did it. So fascinating thought. Take a look over here. Skip to there's two English pages in the middle. Okay. So the first English page, page at the top.
68?
No, 64. 64.
Right.
64, yeah. Okay, so this book is called The Hidden Hand in the Holocaust. There's actually two volumes. It's The Hidden Hand in the Holocaust. It's how that we see Hashgacha B'Kadosh Baruch Hu taking place throughout the different steps of what happened during the Holocaust. It's written by a person named Yaakov Aster. So now... he quotes the Gemara Megillah. The Ritzvah said, if the Gemara Mishal Edom would go forth as one, they would destroy the whole world. The Mishal Chamar Chanina adds, said there were 300 crowned heads of Gemara Mishal Edom and 365 chieftains in Rome. Every day one set forth to meet the other, and one of them is killed, and they have all the trouble of appointing a king again. Okay, so now, first of all, the Vilna Gaon says that the Gears is not Germania, but Germania. Okay. Then he gets involved... describing the idea that Rome is the fourth kingdom of the Malchus. So in the next column it says there are many questions between Rome's and Hitler's thousand-year Reich. The most obvious perhaps is the name of the Germany called itself throughout the Middle Ages, the Holy Roman Empire. That was in the fact that it was neither holy nor truly Roman. Hmm. Right? The early emperors considered themselves direct successors to the Roman emperors. That's what they called themselves, Kaiser, the Caesars. Then he shows that Hitler was a big fan of Mussolini because Mussolini was starting the new Roman Empire. Okay, now, when he built his plan for a rebuilt Berlin as the world city capital, using classic Roman architecture as its form. The symbol of this would be a monstrous assembly hall that would host 180,000 people, which amounted to the Pantheon in Rome. So... he's like the Holy Roman Empire. Now, what's interesting over here is next paragraph. For all these reasons, the Talmud mentions Germania of Edom to refer to the place that either is similar to classic Edomite Roman qualities. But the most telling aspect of this Talmudic passage connecting Germany to Rome is the detail that says the 300 crowned heads of Germania, 365 chieftains. Call it coincidence, the total fact is that by the end of the Middle Ages, Germany remained a crazy patchwork of some 300 individual states. In the 17th century, German princes were confirmed as absolute rulers of the little domains, some 350 of them. Okay, so we have this Germania, which has 300 states and 350 plus crowned heads. That's the Gemara Megillah. Now, the Gemara says, if they would go forth as one, they would destroy the whole world. So Bismarck was the unifier, right? So the unification of Germany was the valid goal of the man considered modern Germany's founder, Otto von Bismarck. In 1860, he set out creating a single German nation from a loose assembly of states. Right? Despite the ideas of emancipation, democracy, which were going across Europe, Bismarck had different ideas of how to unify his people. The great question of the day, Bismarck declared on becoming Prime Minister of Prussia, would not be decided by resolutions and majority votes, but by blood and iron. That's a good German. Okay, so now, in 1871, he had a united Germany. Because he laid siege to Paris, starving the city to surrender, forced France to give up the province of Alsace and Lorraine, and pay reparations. The southern German states agreed to alliance with the northern counterparts, resulting in the creation of Bismarck's cherished United German Empire. When the Nazis started, they called it the Third Reich. They said Bismarck was the Second Reich. The First Reich was the way back when under Charlemagne, etc. The Second Reich was Bismarck. Then they had the Weimar Republic, which was the interruption, and they're the Third Reich. So they saw themselves as a continuation of Bismarck's goal. And many of them considered that Bismarck's creation of a unified Germany was the underlying cause of World War I. And that's, you know, everything played from there. Once Germany was a force to be contended with, it went out and messed up the whole world. And that's Hitler. So Hitler's goal to destroy the Jews, because Hitler felt he's going to have world dominion. He will kill out all the Jews. If he didn't believe he had world dominion, like the Morris says, what are you going to gain? But his goal was to destroy every single Jew and make a museum to the memory of all the Jews, because he planned to have total world dominion.
Right.
Once you unify Germany, you put them all together as one unit, forget it. And that's what he unleashed on upon the world. Gemara Megillah is like, you know, it's a mind-boggling prophecy. Then he discusses how they made the unification, etc. So having the nations being, you have this, then they have their crazy wars. They were constantly fighting with each other all the time. And you think, like, it's bad. You know, it's not bad. The United Nations is not necessarily, we are not fans of the United Nations. The United Nations' final goal of making a universal world with, like, one, under one power, everybody happy together, I mean, wonderful, like, you know, it would not be good for the Jews. I mean, it's Iran, you know, but, like, you know, you see what the United Nations is doing to the Jews, right? Like, you know, it's like, you know, it's Iran. He wrote it 800-900 years ago. You know, it's a Gemara Megillah. You know, he wrote it, you know. Okay. That's the first approach. Let's look at a similar element on page 100, back in the Sedei HaTorah, which is a precept on the Sipur note. Okay. He says like this. Hey, Naam Echad.
Are you going back?
I'm going back,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ki amam habitul hamefer eitzes amenei machshavus. What stops plans from coming to fruition, hu amachloikis hakara. It's when you start having fights. In masibas adosas, in masibas alashonas, and amongst the nations, why don't they accomplish either because they have a different religion, or because they have different languages. So the language being the cultures. Okay? Tzaba was the name of the Avodah Zorah. So they all have the same religion. And they have the same language. Okay? There's nothing going to stop them. There's nothing stopping them from making their final they're going to force their religion upon all the man. Nobody's going to think about a Kodesh Baruch Hu. But when it comes to different beliefs and religions, that allows when the nations disagree about what is really the true power, it gives them a pause to think there might be other powers beyond it. So they can recognize there's, even though their Avodah Zarah had power, there's a power above it. But when they don't have, you know, somebody says an argument, you know, can 1.5 billion people be wrong and all they believe in, you know, their religion? I said, yeah, but there's 2.5 billion people who believe the other way. Well, can they be wrong? Well, they believe this way. So, no, neither one's right, you know. So nothing can force me to accept either of them because I have, there's all these different ways of looking at it, right? But if there's only one way, right, so that's it. That's all there is, and that's right. So that's how the Sephora sees it. So the danger over here was that by spreading this unification would leave no room for Avodas Hashem, and the opposite, when there are different views of religion, forces people to stop and think that maybe there's more to the story. That's how the Zaporna says.
It was a chesed from a Kaddish Baruch Hu to give the world a chance.
Yeah, correct. Okay, so that's how he says it.
And it's come out not. It doesn't sound like it was an onesh and
again, it would be along the lines. It would not necessarily be an onesh. Now, the Barbanel has a third approach or fourth approach if you count the Malbim. So the Barbanel, this is page 99, go back to page 99. I'm sorry. I put them in the order that they're on the Sefer, even though I don't necessarily want to learn them in that order. You know. So what he sees that, he built up a world history view that the Chet of Adam, and then the Chet of Cain, and the Chet of the Dor HaMabul, and the Chet of the Dor HaPlugah was this desire to develop, expand their dominion over the world to better their lot in life and have more gashmias. That was their goal. V'chenei dat chat es dor aflogah, dor melechet odom v'kayin ubonav. V'shver yoyz lehem ribu henyonim ativiyim echrechim l'chumam. Meis Hashem min ha-shamayim. The matter says that, you know, the Baruch Hashem was taking good care of them. V'yosem pulim u'melocha, v'kol omol u'mukharim l'isasi v'shem es nafsham. So the Bershom, even with the Klala, there's a matter that says that before the Mabul, a year's crop would a crop of a year would suffice for 40 years worth of eating. Wow. That's how much bracha there was in the land. So what was the Bershom doing, giving them such bracha to allow them to have time, not be so busy, and to have time to think and to come to understand the Emes, right? What did they do with it? They were not happy with that, how well they were doing. They wanted to develop the different types of industries, building a city, middle besoicha with this tower. There will be like cultured people. They have a medina, you know. Right, they have a culture. People takas ayersim bnei yisoda, as opposed to being farmers, they're part of the culture of the metropolis. V'chashim shatakas amiyuchalem hoye kibus hamedini, and that's the goal of life, is to have a good life. The hismasheich bneiim ashitu b'chevra, and it will create a society. V'zom meulah shabatakli yosef and ushias day. So that is the final goal of mankind. Imashim moshik mizeh mehem. They would get positions of authority, power. They're going to get glory from it. They will acquire possessions, which will then devolve into the desire will bring with the criminality of destruction, which comes with it. Each person lives in his field. He's taking care of his things. I'm not stepping your toes. You're not stepping on my toes. I'm not trying to get more money. You're trying to get more money. I have what I need. I'm sitting. I'm contemplating the value, the importance of life, etc. Once you start going after things which are not the intrinsic needs of man, you're starting going after the luxuries and the desires, etc. It will block your path for coming to the true understanding of what you're really here for. Hashem So what Shagira says, Adam, Harishim and Gan Eden. Adam left Gan Eden. Gira says, Kayan me Eretz Mashal, but Kayan had to go into Golus also. This one of Girish me Oilam me Mabel, and the next generations were totally wiped out of the world. So they're also Nigrish. Kayapisham Shava, there were parallels in what they were doing wrong. Seeing the Eitzadas, meaning the goal of having the knowledge of to subjugate the world. And Eitzachayim is finding the true value of life. So that's why there had to be a punishment, which was this, and the punishment, the total destruction of if your goal in life is to create this beautiful society with this powerful power and with this modern city, so the destruction of all of it has to be extremely painful for them. That was go back to go find some place to live, and start over again in exile. So this is how the Barbanel. Now it's like each one of the Rishonim sees in this story another prediction of our modern society. Like we have the UN issue, the anti-Jewish issue. We have the reunification of all the world under this universalism, ends up being progressive, anti-religion. And there's no room for Judaism anymore. Or for any religion anymore. There's no room for anything over there. And they believe you can unify because everybody, whatever he wants. Everybody wants to have a good life. That's the argument. So I can just convince all of the Muslim states that they want a good life and they'll join me and not stop fighting me, Right? The problem is the Muslims haven't figured out that's the goal in life yet, so that's why that hasn't worked, which is good for us, right? As much as we don't like that, what would you like the other option to be?
Right, if all the Arab states would join together.
All the Arab states would join together with the West and say, yeah, the goal in life is to have a good time. Right? What's left? There's no place left for any higher aspirations in life. So then, what's supposed to happen? So that's a scary thought. Okay, the last piece is a long piece. I tried to make it as
again. So according to the Barbanel, the reason why the Abish had to spread them apart was because the main verb from the Barbanel is that he's spreading them apart because otherwise they're...
No, otherwise. There was a punishment. He said that was a punishment for the fact that they made their goal in life
to increase
their physical possessions.
Right.
Okay, the last piece is a Shir Das.
That's what we hear.
The name of Shir Das is Dor HaFloga, so it's like, it's not so hard to find the Shir Das. Does he speak about Shir HaFloga? Yeah, he does. Yeah, the Shir Das called Shir Dor HaFloga. Now, I put in about less than half of the Shir Das. The rest of the packet is the Shir Das. So we have like 8 pages or so in here. It's less than half of the whole Shir Das. But I cut out as much as I could to make it... Okay. So he's grappling with what exactly did they do wrong. And it says, okay, so the Medrash says that, so the Medrash comes up with these interesting ideas that they said, it's not fair that Russia should have the heavens and we get the earth. We're going to open the heavens and we're going to fight with them. And we're going to use axes to chop them down. Okay? Or that, every 1,656 years, the Shemayim gets weak and we need to, we need to support the heavens and block out the rain from coming in, and then make another flood. I mean, like, he says, Kimi Pesi, Yarmel Leparash Tiri Medesh Kripshutan. What fool would understand the Medesh Kripshutan? Zdor Flogo, you tipshim Kayla, they were such idiots. Ludama is Kiev Shalalas the Rikia, Velasim Ita Mohama, Bekadumas, Vikadoma. They weren't that stupid. Well, Yadano, Nachachno, we know from the Kedaris Mishanah, why you could tell them Bechachma, they had tremendous knowledge. Nimrin Shah Yabasech, Ador Haflogam, and Higam, Kabur Rashi, Laposik, Kalim is Gervit Sayyid, Chazal Darshan, Lamakalam, Alakashbrokh, but that's their flog. Nemr, Yudari Ribbon, Miss Kavan Limrid Boy. So Yudari Ribbon, it means he knew the power of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. So he knew that you can't fight him with axes. So Eretiro Sukhazal, Ki Yudaya, he knew Rivainai. So you can't learn the Medrash Kripshuta. He was quite a knowledgeable man. He was a madrega Yudei Ribonoi. I mean, we would like the Chazal to say that about us. The second half we don't want, right? It's kind of a limerick, but Yudei Ribonoi, it's quite a statement. Can you have Shadora Floga, Hoyinivara Midas, they were such lacking on understanding. Okay, number two. They were such fools, or on a boar, you know, boars, right? Why deal with them? A hundred years later, somebody in the Migdol, like, trying to get the haven't got the heaven yet, like, you know, like, you know,
knock yourself out,
you know, like, you know, like, so they, like, first of all, hey, it's a big problem, I gotta deal with this, like, really. I'm really worried what's going to happen. What's Russia worried about? The person that can reach the heavens. They were going to accomplish something. Unless Russia gets involved. What could they have accomplished? They really would have made supports for the heaven. They would have, so what exactly is going on over here? So clearly, you cannot learn these midrash and kipshuta. Okay, Rabban Zal, Achrei Shemasiel Rodfei Apshat. He takes all the different pshat in which the pshuta shalmikra, the people that the Mefarshim say, and he says they don't make any sense. We're with him. We understand the problem. Mevar lan al pi asoid. He explains it al pi kabbalah. Ki kavanosam hoya lekatzitz benetiyos. Their goal was to do kitzitz benetiyos. We have to explain what that is in a second. So he goes through, he quotes all of the Rambam, and the Maskel Yavin. The Rambam, whenever he brings something which is al pi kabbalah, he says at the end, this is the Maskel Yavin. Those who have knowledge will figure out, understand what I'm saying. And if you don't, that's, well, that's life. You know, Hinei gam huzal lo gila lanu inyan achet v'ayin shir. Ve'ezer shachar jesh to binyan amigdol im kitzim anatiyas. Ve'yichas inyan achetam ufi asoyed im pshat akosu. So, like, the Ramban is, like, difficult. Like, the pasuk has no indication that was the problem. What does Middle do with kitzin atiyos? So, what's kitzin atiyos? Kitzin atiyos like this. And the next paragraph also. Let's do the next paragraph, and then we'll explain this a little bit. Came a son of a sorma kadosh, minyan dar flaga, the al-pikabala, al-pikabala, so emis, ki chaitim hoyu b'mash rotsa l'hafrit spheres malchus mishara spheres l'shamash b'kirat sonam. They wanted to separate malchus from the other spheres. It comes in a moving cloud, doesn't make any sense what it means. Call you do it, call Mas Amis, you call a serious shame, etzim, alakus, vech shayat, lahafrit, sirahakas, serious, a kadosh, shame, etzim, alakus. What does it mean you can separate a sirah? Okay. Like, totally confusing. So what is kitzim and atiyas? So, kitzim and atiyas, and what are spheres? That's a fair question. What, you know, that. You know, some of the people who were misnaga to some of the Yom Kabbalah were very nervous about the spheres, because spheres were, as it were, seeming to give some type of element of hakshama of to the barei. You can't divide Kadosh Baruch Hu is echad. He's one. You can't divide him into pieces. So what are the spheres? So spheres are like this. The best moshul for spheres would be an electric producing station, right? You have a tremendous generator, this dynamo, which is producing, you know, millions and millions of volts of electricity. And then eventually it's going to come into my house at 120 volts, right? So if you take this tremendous power of electricity and you just send it over these high intensity wires into my house, it's going to blow up, right? So we don't want that. So we have step downs. We have step downs along the way. We take it from, you know, megavolts to just kilovolts, and then, you know, eventually it steps down to my house, 120 volts, and I can use it, you know. And it's you know, some level of being, it's functional. The higher, it's, you know, there's a Muslim with Kalvach Chaimer, you know, 120 volts works good. Imagine what would be, it would be 800 volts, you know. Right? You know, and your Kalvach Chaimer, you know, would be a million volts. It doesn't work like that. Right, we can't be makabel such power. The Bereshit, when he creates a musig of, he wants to be mashpia toiv to the world, that the toiv comes from Kadosh Baruch, he's toiv, Everything which happens in the world is an expression of Elikus in a certain sense. He uses the process of step downs to get it down to this world. The spheres are the musik of the step downs, which allow this overpowering force of the Bari Olam, which had it come revealed in this world, we would have no existence. We can't exist in the full presence of the Bari Olam because we don't really exist. If all there's a Kadosh Baruch Hu in his full glory, where's the no room for us? So how does the Rosham created a process of stepping down? The last sphere is the sphere which is the one which we actually brings it down. It's this world. This is what we is the sphere of Malchus. So so what happens is like this. So a person comes along and says, I see all these powers. So instead of, I see all this electricity going through the wires. I forget about the generators. Look at the wires. So I forget about the Eitz HaChayim, and I just look at the branches. I see there's this thing generating life, power, whatever it is. The branches produce leaves, etc. Which means the Baruch Hashem has a system which he brings into the world from the root, which is the Bari Olam. The trunk is the Bari Olam, and it branches out slowly. So if you cut off the branch from the source, you're being mekatzeis benetiyos. You're cutting off the netiya, the plant, what's planted, from its source. That's called tzitzis benetiyos.
And a desire to get closer to the...
So the goal of tzitzis benetiyos usually is that because the person did create that these steps have koyach, so if I know what I'm doing, I can manipulate those and get what I want, but ignoring the source. So that's a form of a Vedazara. It's so one of the arguments they had against the people, when they presented the Council of the Spheres is people are going to come along and see, well, it means you're taking Kadosh Baruch Hu with Echad and saying he has different steps. That's a form of Kitzav Natiyus. You're looking at each thing independently, not back to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Very dangerous reality. That was one of the issues which they had with learning the Kabbalah. The people who knew understand it. We think of Kabbalah is this is this like
magical
magic. Kabbalah is a science, right? The Baruch Hashem has a very rigorous system of how he puts Hashpah into the world, and it's a system, it's a science. It's not a science which you can measure with our tools, but it's and there are some of the Sifrei Kabbalah read like science books. If you take this shame of a Kadosh Baruch Hu and you combine it with this, then this that makes this shame, it makes this power. It's like a chemical. It's a chemistry textbook. Some of them are pretty boring. It's like, you have to memorize your chemistry, you have to memorize some of your formulas, you have to memorize some of the,
periodic table of Kadosh Baruch Hu's names.
Right. That's, and how they, what they do, how they interact with each other, and how you combine them. So a person who learns what's called, quote-unquote, practical Kabbalah, knows how to mix them together. You put together, your chemicals, and you make a big, exciting... So they would get, so there is a musig of being mishtamish with these kaychas to what they want to accomplish. Okay, now, so this is the question. So he wants to say a pshat, this is what the Talz Rav wants to say a pshat like this. So I want to say a pshat like this, he says. Well, but I cut off the first three pages of the Shmuz. I think I have a pshat. It'll fit into the psukim. They all living together in harmony. They were becoming quite numerous. They're going to start spreading out. And they realize, each will go in his own direction. They realize, living by yourself, being out there by yourself, it's not easy. It's not safe. There's many different dangers which are out there. All about the item. So let's come together as one big unit. Everyone will use their talents. They're going to come organized. To use with their, to gather together with all of their combined talents and abilities. In overcoming all of the challenges of the world, and all of the different things, which will damage people. Right, so if you can imagine all the medical society comes together and every single person in the whole world works together to find a cure, you have much better chances of finding a cure. And if we all work together to find a solution to a mechanical problem, we're going to have a much better chance of overcoming the mechanical problems. And we have a problem with wild animals, we work together, we're going to come up with a much better way of solving the problem. By becoming one unified and becoming organized, they realize everyone will work for the better of mankind. They can overcome illness, they overcome other things. There's tremendous amount of power, energy in the world. There's different herbs. We all work together to find the right herb. We'll cure this illness. Now, he says that we find out nowadays how much has been revealed. He was there from 1930, right? So imagine in those generations, and we think those generations were not so smart. Chazal said that they were actually much smarter than we. They knew more about things than we did. Okay, they had the Sefer Adamarishan, which the Sefer Refuas, that there was no illness that they couldn't heal. So yeah, that's smart, right? You can heal all the illnesses. But the Rosh Hashanah sends illnesses to the world as a way to be a shliach, to point out that the things that you need to correct. You know, that the tshuva, you know. But like, we just heal it all, so who needs God? Okay. But the Rosh Hashanah, the bottom paragraph, show you cry on the races of Briya. God lum oid b'kaychaz nafshim b'chachmasim. Heim vada yodo behar b'kaychaz nistorim. And elamim itonah b'teva anigla. There's much about that they knew about the world which we don't know. There's one Rishon who mentions that one of the pshat about the Middle was a rocket that they were going to shoot up to the heavens. So they had rockets, you know, like. So first of all, the fact that a Rishon can describe the idea of a rocket was before they, 500 years before they made rockets, right?
Small enough,
right? But he's saying that you know, the Dorflug was making rockets. They were pretty knowledgeable. But they knew much more. Besides the physical world, the metaphysical world, for sure they knew how much better than us. They understood the Shadim and the Kishuv, etc. Really, everything exists. All of the cures for illnesses and any other issues which exist in the world, it's available. You just have to find it. That was their plan. Okay, let's get together. Now, what was the purpose of the Migdal? They realize that people gather around a flag. People gather around the symbol. The Migdal was the symbol. This is a symbol of unification. It's the United Nations building, right? You know, we gather around the building. Each part of the operation. This way, we won't each go in our own way. We'll use the person of Panay Kalaris. They shouldn't spread out. Okay? Now, if you need a lion, ain't count shum chait. What's bad with that? You want a good life? Vixen the tachbulus, echli notsum ibegoyal. A very baruchu, rova yodash, because I'm saying my ela, tomun regish ra. Deep down, there was a problem here. It wasn't obvious, but deep down, there was a problem. We want to control our lives. We want to be in control. And we have tremendous ability to find all, solve all the world's problems, and we'll be in control of our lives. That was the goal.
Maybe that's a little different than from what we said before, no?
But
what's now he's saying that we're going to try to undo.
So their goal was deep down on the surface. It's a beautiful plan. Mankind will come together, we'll solve all of the world's illnesses, we'll solve all of the dangers of the animals, and we'll solve all of the poverty. We're going to solve all the world's problems. It sounds beautiful. But it says, deep down, what is that saying? We want to be in control of our destiny. Hmm. Okay?
Well, that's what you mean, but they're going to get rid of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning that they're not going to turn toward him.
Right.
And well, they plan they don't need him anymore. I mean, ask your modern scientists. Who needs God? We're going to unlock the secrets of the universe and we'll solve all the problems. If you'd ask them themselves, they wouldn't say that. They weren't necessarily aware of it, you know, what was going on in their subconscious. So the morale says that when you have something functioning on multiple levels, the Torah will present it on multiple levels as well. And on the simple reality of what was happening, it looked like that. That Torah will present it as such, even though deep down there's a whole other layer of understanding. And that the side of the Torah will explain the other layer. That's why we have the Torah will present something as pshat and as side at the same time. He went deep into the issue. They want to take over their lives. And that's where she says, okay, this is not going to go good. The final results of this are not going to be good. And they had good plans. They really were. This was going to work. This was communism at its best. Right? Everybody's going to work for the good betterment of society. Everybody's going to put in all of their kaiches. And they were committed. They found a way to get everybody on board, not just by using, you know, the terror of the government. So people are really going to, you know, the communism failed, partially because it failed because nobody wanted to help the government. Right? They were scared, you know, but, you know, at the end of the day, that's not a good motivator. Right? But they were committed. If you imagine the Soviet Union, that had 300 million idealistic, committed citizens, what it could have accomplished.
Right.
So this is it. They're going to take over. There's no God. There's no need for God. We're going to control our destiny. Right? God is just opium for the masses, you know, like, you know, and we're going to overcome that. And we're going to really make a beautiful world.
Right.
But it had to be atheistic by definition.
It had to be what?
Atheistic by definition. Because you can't, you know, there's no room for God in that world. Okay. And this is how he understands. The Russian says, no, that's not going to happen. Now, he presents a fascinating thing.
So does Hashem want us to come up with these cures only under certain conditions? I mean,
so it's a fascinating.
Created the world to have the cures, right? So the question is, where do you draw the line? Right.
Right. Good question.
Okay. So the answer is, almost ago, he'd be talking on Ishtadlus. You have a responsibility to be Ishtadlus, but you have to generate within yourself an understanding that after all your Ishtadlus, you don't really have control. So he gives a story over here, which I'm not going to go through the story. I'll say the story outside. Okay. So he says that he remembers this, there's a story with, you know, the goal of making life secure. And we spoke about it in the Sukkot, the idea that security is with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. But their goal was, they're going to make life secure. There's no dangers. There's no fears. It's totally secure life. It's a wonderful life. You can't make life secure. It doesn't work. That was the mistake. It says he gives the story that there was two balabatim and tells were very close with each other. And they both had a very similar, you know, businesses, etc. And they both realized that Tells was a smaller city. I mean, for Lithuanian standards, it was considered a larger city compared to the Shtetlas, but it was 10,000 people, right? You know, Vilna was 50,000 people. But there was another city nearby where there was a much better market for their what they were producing for their factory. So they both said they're going to move to there and start their factories there. So let's call him Reuven. Reuven was successful in moving his factory there, and Shimon was not. And Reuven became quite wealthy and, you know, powerful, etc. And Shimon remains very limited in his resources, staying in Tells. Okay? So Reuven was very happy, and Shimon was pretty sad. World War I breaks out, and the way things played out, the city where Reuven had moved to was very hard hit by the war, and he had to go into exile and run away and left everything behind. He was impoverished. His wife and children died along the way from the problems, etc. Shimon, Tells, was a smaller city. He was able to maintain himself. He stayed in the city. And after the war, he was able to reestablish himself quite well. So, you know, we see this all the time. A person thinks what's bad for him is good for him. What thinks good for him is bad for him. You know, we don't understand what really the realities of life are. Hashkoch will go its own way. But I can, you know, sort of set up, you know, I'm going to set up my system, how it's going to work, and I'll guarantee everything. I have it all planned out. I remember once I had a bacher working with a bacher. He had it all planned out. He's going to go to this college. He's going to get this, you know, he's going to get this score in his LSATs, and he's going to go to this law school, and he's going to get this job. And it all worked out. The problem was he didn't get the right score. So he took it again. He still didn't get the right score. So he pushed it. He had to redo his whole life, you know. He ended up becoming a rub instead. So I don't know. You know, is that better or worse? I don't know. You have to decide. But upon him, you know, it doesn't work. Now he says a fascinating thing. Turn to the page, Reishon and Beis. So there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says that Ein Ben David Bo Achis Yash Min HaGula. Klai Yisrael will push it, give up from the Gula. The Mor says, He saw the Chachamim were trying to process to how to bring Mashiach. I ask you, please, don't get involved, because you're doing it, you're making Hashem Mashiach take longer. You're being Merachakim, you're making come, because Shoshim Boim Hesach Adas, Elohim Mashiach Mitzia Vahakur. Right. Okay, now, so what does it mean that you're supposed to be Yashon Mashiach? We know that the laws, we have to believe in, we have to wait for Mashiach. Hesachadas, there's Chakaloy, there's a person, I'm a Chaka for Mashiach, he's considered a Kaifer. What does it mean? So he wants to suggest like this. On page Reishon and Daleth. We have no way to know how it's supposed to happen. We don't know what are the steps we can do to bring Mashiach more quickly. There were spread out over many generations who had all these different plans how we're going to make Mashiach come quicker. They tried to force him to come that way. We're going to rebuild the land, whatever we're going to do. It's hidden. That's what it means, Yishash Menegula. When we finally recognize that we don't have the power over Mashiach, then Mashiach can come. Because when we think we are the ones going to bring Mashiach, because we know how to create the future, so we're stuck with the Dor HaVloga's attitude. So Baruch Hashem, instead of doing it for God, we're doing it for Ruchnius. But it's the same problem. When you give up trying to figure out how you're going to force Mashiach to come, then he'll come. Shem Shiyafshal Mitzvah Mitzvah. I got an Eitzes Nachbulus. Right? Someone just lost, it's lost. And when it shows up, it shows up. So, you know, you can come with all the ideas, it doesn't work. Sometimes by searching, you end up going further away from where you have to find it. Right? The famous Medrash is Omer Binyan, who calls Bechet Sumash Mesh Kodesh Boch and Nehem. Right? I had one yesterday. So I have my.
What's the Medrash again?
Omer Binyan, who calls Bechet Sumash Mesh Kodesh Boch and Nehem. The Rebbe told me, he wants us to see, we're not going to see. So I woke up in the morning, I use my cell phone as my alarm clock, and I always put it in my holster. I couldn't find my holster. I wasted 5 minutes, you know, because I'm very good at leaning over and having my phone fall out and break. So I have, you know, I spent 5 minutes, you know, I don't have time to have 5 minutes in the morning, I don't have time 5 minutes in the morning, because I'm going to be late for shiur or whatever. You know, it's 5:15 in the morning, I'm looking for my holster over here, like, I got to get out of the house. I get the yeshiva. Okay, it is. I stick my pocket. I get the yeshiva. After davening, I realize that my holster's on my belt. I don't know how it got there. The Russian didn't want me. I looked at my belt before. The Russian didn't want me to see it. So I didn't see it. You know, so there's a skula to find something by saying that memra. So why is it a skula? Because you finally recognize the fact that you're takasuma and the Russian is not going to let you see it until he wants you to see it. When you finally recognize, then you realize that was the goal of the Metziah, that you should lose it. You should recognize Kodesh Baruch Hu runs the world. Then you'll find it. Right? So I had a Meister once. We were like, you know, this is, goes back into 1986. So I think it was 86, yeah. So we were in Birmingham, Alabama for Pesach by my brother-in-law. You know, we got married in 83, but I didn't really spend so much time with my brother. He was a Rav, so he wasn't coming for Yom Tov. So I got him for Yom Tov, he wasn't there. But this summer he would come in, you know, we'd drop his kids off, and the kids would go to camp here, you know, Camp Shalom in the good old days, right? And he would go back to, then he'd come at the end of the summer, he'd come pick his kids up, and they would stay with my, you know, their grandparents. So I saw him a few times here and there, but never really. So we went through Pesach, you know, so he, poor guy, you know, he got this really frum yeshivish brother-in-law from Tells coming to for Yom Tov, you know, and like, you know, it's Birmingham, Alabama, like, you know, it's like, you know, and he went to Chabad Chaim, you know, which is, you know, in those days wasn't as frum as Tells, you know, and maybe it is now, I don't know who was more frum, maybe it's more frum than Tells nowadays, but I don't know, whatever, but, you know, and, you know, so we come in, and we arrived, like, the day before Erev Pesach. My sister-in-law's cleaning, and she loses her diamond ring. She took it off, and she put it down, she loses her diamond ring. And they looked high, and they looked low, and they looked low, and they looked high, and they can't find the diamond ring. So in walks my wife, and she says, no problem. He says it three times, and she finds the ring. Like everyone says, whoa, you know, holy woman, you know, and that was a great way to start the relationship, you know. Like, you know, okay, you know, it doesn't work. The same way that's true, it comes with the same thing with Gula. The person says, I'm going to bring the Gula when I'm going to bring the Gula. The more you try and push me, you know, it's just, don't shtip. The more saying it's an edge, what calls them on, human beings thinks that they can force God's broken to bring the Gula, then that's, the whole purpose of Gula is that the person one runs the world. Gula is when you come to the clarity of the Hashgacha of Kodesh Baruch. The more you think you can force the Gula, the more it's the opposite of Gula. So Rashi says, I'm sorry, yeah, you know. So that's what Rashi says, please don't make it take longer. Right? So this is the Ruchnitzik version of the Chet of the Dora Flaga. We think, you know, that we can accomplish X, Y, and Z, and then mail them, you know, we can make Mashiach come. You know, you can imagine that he wasn't a big fan of We Want Mashiach Now. You know.
I was going to say that. I was thinking
that. it doesn't work. Right? And what's scary is, like, what he's saying is, like, you know, there's some of these stories about, you know, that they almost brought Mashiach, and then just then, you know, the cat walked over his path, and he fell, and he fell, and Mashiach didn't come, and they, oh, why'd the cat have to come right now? Like, because he had to come right now. That's exactly the point. you can't. You know, they got together. You know what? You know they're gonna. You know, and make the shofars and the this and that. You know, the story about the shamish that he was gonna wash his hands on the Melech HaMashiach. You know, and nobody came and made him. You know, run. You know, yelled at him and he ran away. You know, like Melech, he didn't wash his hands on Melech HaMashiach, so he didn't come. You know, he would have come. Mashiach would have come. You know, like he wasn't supposed to come yet. But the more we try and play the game, the more it's a fascinating thought. So understanding, you know. It's very, you know, you have to put this shmuz together with the shmuz we said the Sukkot night. What this really means is we're telling man, at the end of the day, you have no control over your life. Now, that is one of the most serious things. You can't control your destiny. You can't control your future. You can't control the future of the world. You can't control your own life. You can't protect yourself. You are just totally, like you know, on a boat in the middle of a tsunami with nothing. Not even oars. Right?
Pointless to live, isn't it?
That's the hargasha you walk away from the shmuz, right? And then you turn to Kodesh Baruch Hu and recognize he's taking, you're in his hands and you trust him and you feel the security by being in the Kodesh Baruch Hu's arms, right? That's the goal. So they try to create a security which was a false security and they lost the true security, the warmth of the true security. I just say a fascinating thing. If you look at Rav Volba and Ali Shur on the Yenu Bitochen, his first piece says there's nothing which undermines a person's feeling of security than the Mido Bitochen. That's his first line. It says because once you come to recognize that everything's in the hands of Kadosh Baruch Hu, the first reaction is like, oy vey. You know? So at any given moment, if a person, one of my friends one time said, he says, a person has three options in this world. He says, he can either be, you know, he says, either he can be a maimon, he can be a fair, or he can be a mashun.
What's the second one?
He can be a horse, he can be a maimon, he can be a horse, or he can be a mashun. He says, you have three options. Don't think. You don't think about how dangerous life is. And even when the person can develop cancer, he could get a virus. He could, you know, he could have a heart attack. I mean, there's no guarantees. His business could collapse because you know anything can happen at any given moment. So don't think. That's the fair approach. Right? Horses don't think, but worry about the future. You can think about it out of your mind, or you can believe in Kodesh Baruch Hu. Those are three options. It's either you're a maimon, you're a fair, or you're a mashugah.
Who said this?
Three options, you know. They were thinking, they weren't doing the fair approach. They didn't want to be mashuganas, so they decided they're going to control. But the true reality is that you can't. And that's very scary. It's extremely scary. So the solution is be a maimon. So if you trust the one who's in control, you truly trust him, so I'm not scared. Whatever's going to happen. He's in control, so if it's going to happen, it's good for me. So, yeah, a person might die. Okay, and?
But where, doesn't that breed laziness?
Well, if it might breed laziness, but if the goal is, since the Russia made us that our nature is not to feel like that, you got to work at feeling like that.
We still have to do our part. I mean, it's not saying not to do the...
No, there you have
he creates those opportunities to find cure, so we should do that. It just, not believe that that's...
But understand that after all the cures,
yeah. Don't do any of that, then it's not. Then he gave us a chance, and we didn't use it. Then.
Right, correct. Yeah. But we can find the cure. And
I understand that in theory, that cure could change the next day if Hashem wanted to change. I mean,
right, or there could be something else that could happen. You know, or
they get penicillin, but then they still gave another.
He can change it. I mean, he can change it, but the idea is that. We have to do our part.
Right, there's a chivish dalus, but that's the biggest challenge of life, is to do a chivish dalus and recognize that we're not in control. Like, if we don't do a dalus, like Hirsch says, you're lazy, so it's easy to take control of the control.
But also, in the story here, it sounded like maybe it's a little different, but he was saying here that had he not be below their language, they would have succeeded. That's what it sounds like.
I mean, they're here. Correct.
So they could have accomplished.
There's a tremendous amount that they could accomplish being shalot over the world. They do accomplish that. The problem is, the person says, you know, I could let that play out and let's see what will happen, and I could undermine it a different way. So Rosh Hashanah was undermined this way. You know, he undermined it. Right, because it's not like we don't have the power. We have a tremendous amount of power to find cures. We don't know what the results of that might be.
Right. He gives us that power, but he can also undermine it the same way he gave it to us.
Correct. Anyway. I mean, there's a famous mice with the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish is supposed to have said, you know, I can't tell you that it could be it's apocryphal. Suppose that he said that he knew a cure for cancer. He said, but I don't want to say it because the illness which will come in instead will be much worse. Because the Russian does not like being in the world where he doesn't have how to cause people to do tshuva through illness. So just because we can cure this one, the next one will be worse. So why should I offer it? That's what supposedly the Chazon Ish said. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't mean we have a chiyuv to try. But we have to recognize that the sales pitch to the, you know, we're going to eradicate the ills and the illnesses of the world. No, we have a chiyuv to try to help this individual,
it's
a mitzvah.
To help someone.
And recognize that I will never eradicate the illnesses. Right. That's a fascinating challenge. But I can't say, you know, just, and the more I do that, the harder it is to have the bitachon. Right? If I don't try, it's pretty easy.
The same thing with tzedakah. You can say Hashem will, we have to do our part to help the person, even though, I mean, it's the same kind of.
Right? Okay.